We all think about what we eat. We plan our meals or count carbs or any number of things when it comes to what we consume and what we put in our bodies. But do you ever think about the flavor of what you consume? Of course you do. What we eat or drink all comes down to whether it tastes good or it doesn't. In fact, taste is the number one consideration when it comes to what we put inside of our bodies. Yet there's just a lot more to it than whether we like it or dislike it. There's even a whole industry dedicated to it. Flavor is memory. Flavor is feeling. Flavor is art. Flavor is science. Flavor is McCormick Flavor Solutions. And welcome to our Flavor University podcast, where we look at the art, history, science, and education behind flavor. Today marks the 25th anniversary of the Flavor Forecast. And joining me today in the celebration is Carrie Rock, product manager and North American team lead for our flavor businesses and for our Flavor Forecast, and Chef Hadar Cohen Aviram, specifically the executive chef for the North American consumer business and the lead for the Flavor Forecast.
So excited to be here.
So excited?
Very excited to be here.
So tell me, I know a little bit about the Flavor Forecast itself, but specifically, it's the 25th anniversary, so that's almost like a birthday in a way.
You know, having this 25th milestone is huge. McCormick has been defining flavor, if you think about it, for the past 25 years through the Flavor Forecast.
Of course.
By really calling out and accurately putting on the plate, if you will, those flavors and ingredients that just became part of our culture. So all these different flavors that we're discussing, we did predict them. We have a pretty good track record because, you know, again, all these flavors kind of stuck with us and we did evolve and develop. So we started by predicting that singular flavor like Chipotle, like those flavors like pumpkin pie spice. We evolved and developed into predicting pairings. So two flavors at a time, then cuisines like Korean and Korean barbecue. And now we have fully fledged umbrella trends, which kind of enable us to tell a story through flavor and ingredients and really be able to take people through these different journeys to identify the flavors that make sense for their businesses as well and to their lives as well. So that's something that we're constantly thinking about, constantly evolving. There's always something new to tackle. So that's something we're really looking at all times to make sure that we're still being relevant. And the Flavor Forecast, the way we started, the way we really look at it is through a 9 months long process where we start big. We know that food does not happen in a void. There's so many different influences. We start by looking at things like digital, like technology shifts, cultural shifts, all these different segments that can affect the way that we cook, flavor, and eat. And then we kind of distill them, see what can relate back to and affect all of these different flavors, all these different techniques. And then after we have those, we drill down, we bring in our own secret sauce, which is actually our people, our McCormick employees, to really help us think about how do we see flavor? How do we see ingredients? We have more than 100 people participating in the creation of this report, from chefs and flavorists and product developers, scientists within the sensory realm, marketers, even data analysts and photographers who come together to create the report. Some of us go out and after we see those bigger influences, we take a look back and see, what do we want to see? What proof points do we see? We go out and collect a lot of, well, this is the portion everybody's always excited about. We go out and we eat. We just want to make sure that we sample lots of different things because that's how it comes to life. And that's where all of our passionate collaborators around the world, you know, really get to play with us and go out and see all of these different things. We then bring them back, distill them into insights. We see what common threads are coming through and what might be something that's a little more, you know, related to a specific region, because we have to make sure the global trend report is truly global. So we make sure we brainstorm with those individuals. We come together as teams, we have workshops, and then we take all of these nuggets, distill them into insights, and then create the trends with multiple quantitative data to make sure we back up our hunches with facts, to make sure that we bake that in and have plenty of data to support all of our findings. And so the 25th edition is really no different.
Wow, that is a lot of information to really, as you said, to kind of distill it down into, you know, a very, I would say, short report, but again, just the time and effort and the care and the intensity that you put behind it. But you mentioned briefly about some of the trends necessarily. Can you define exactly what you mean by trends per se? And can we break them down into, I think there's three different trends. Can you tell me just briefly an overview of them, and then we'll get into them a little bit later on?
Yes, of course. So trends as we define them are really flavor forecast trends. Let's define it as that. Those are clear differentiated indications of where the flavor industry might go and how we all, at the end of the day, we all eat. We're all consumers. What would we go after? What will we see on our plates in the next 18 months to 3 years? We actually started with predicting 5 years out, but we all know that things are going really fast these days. There's a really interesting, in the back of my mind, this huge scheme of, you know, how trends just became, they just react so quickly to what the pace that our lives take. So we as part of the evolution, we did narrow that down to 18 months to 3 years ahead. So that's the kind of like the time frame. And what we do is we want to be able to clearly define what do we predict that we will see leading some of the flavors. So it's always a good combination of lower hanging fruit. So things that might you may already see coming to fruition. You may already have had a chance to maybe taste it in a up and coming restaurant or a pop-up menu that you've interacted with. And then things that may come to fruition a little later, so that we give a good balance of options, not only to, you know, this trend report is something that we know consumers are interested in and want to get to know as foodies, but also our flavor industry, our customers as McCormick. We want to be able to give them some line of sight so that they have time to work options into their funnel, however, in whatever way that they see fit.
So that's definitely a lot when it comes to the overall aspect of how you talk about the trends for, again, predicting those necessarily. What would be, so those first, let's talk about the first trend necessarily. Can you tell me a little bit more about that one?
Yeah, we can definitely, and we should dive into those trends for the 25th report. So let's start with tropical vibes.
Tropical vibes.
I'm just saying the word and you already are, you kind of have that beach in your ring. So tropical vibes is really about traveling with our taste buds to warm weather ingredients, flavors, and cuisines. This is somewhat different than a foodie travel or a culinary travel, which I know there's an entire industry that is geared towards taking you to the coolest places around the world and having you taste your way through the world. This is specific to that warm weather cuisine, that warm belt, island vibes in some ways too. So really thinking about all of those flavors that come to mind, and Carrie will touch on that in a little bit, but all of those tropical fruit, tropical chilies, some cuisines that are warm weather cuisines that are coming up around the globe outside of where the original cuisine can be had. So we talked about influences, right? So if we take a step back, what are some of the influences that we saw that contributed to this? You may have noticed that in the past year, tropical has had its cultural moment. People started identifying as tropical plant parents. There was a 110% increase in tropical chic on Pinterest and a 35% increase in coconut aesthetics, which I'm totally here for. So some of these influences did affect the way that people wanted to experience beyond like home decor. It also was something that we saw in food and flavor. We saw an increase in global cuisines that did originate in some of those island cuisines. So for instance, Jamaican cuisine in the US has started peeking into fast casual, which tells us as chefs that people are interested. They want to see the Chipotle of Jamaican come to life. Lots of jerk seasoning. You probably saw it on a bunch of things, on chips, on in different restaurants as seasoning, as blends. So you did see that coming up here. And at the same time, we saw a corresponding trend in Europe, for instance. So their destination is Sri Lanka. So we've seen Sri Lankan cuisine come to life. We saw it even in the U.S. coming into some retailers in some offerings. So that really tells us that, again, people are interested, that it's becoming something that is more interesting, and that kind of, you know, wraps the quantitative, qualitative findings that we saw as well, because we did see it in our, you know, individual kind of reports that came in, the insights, all of those good little nuggets. So again, some of those flavors, I will hand it over to Carrie to talk about.
Yeah, of course. So definitely fruit is, I think, the first thing people think of when they think of tropical. And, you know, when we're talking about tropical, a lot of the times people think of the Caribbean, but it really is much wider than that. We are looking at, you know, influence from not just the Caribbean, but, you know, like Hadar was saying, that belt around the U.S., really following that equator. So we're seeing flavor influence from the Caribbean, but also Africa and Asia. Even the top part of Australia falls within the tropics. Which has been really fun to explore all these fun different cuisine types. Now, if we look at fruit for a second, you are completely right in that pineapple and coconut are some of the most popular tropical fruit flavors. But we're also seeing things beyond that, like mango, dragon fruit. I mean, Taco Bell even had a dragon fruit freezy, which was really exciting to see that sort of tropical profile moving into these quick service restaurants. We also are seeing guava as quite a growth engine here within the fruit space. And we're not just seeing these fruit profiles in the sweet space either. Yes, we're seeing them in beverages that are leaning sweet and in cookies, but we're seeing things like guava hot sauce or guava barbecue sauce as popular items on social media that we have our eye on. I mean, I really expect to see more of these coming to the retail space soon. And when we're really talking about developing here, it's really interesting to take some of these tropical fruits that maybe consumers aren't as familiar with and pair them with profiles that are a little bit more familiar. And I think that's a really great way to maybe bridge in some of these tropical flavors if you know that your audience and your consumer base is maybe not quite as used to things like guava. You could pair that with strawberry and maybe make that something that is a little bit more approachable by pairing it with something they know a little bit more. It's also something that I think has been really interesting to track at some of these vacation destinations. One of my favorite examples here is to look at the Epcot Food and Wine Festival that happens at Disney World, where they have this collection of different booths that represent different countries. And when we actually studied that as a part of the flavor forecast this year, we saw, yes, some of those tropical countries like Hawaii, their booth had tropical profiles like a passion fruit macadamia cheesecake, expected. But we also saw these tropical profiles in booths that I would never have expected to find tropical profiles, like the France booth had a mango passion fruit creme brulee.
Oh, wow.
Which is, again, taking that unfamiliar, that mango passion fruit profile and pairing it with something familiar like creme brulee. And really just seeing that at the France Pavilion or at the American Pavilion, seeing a coconut banana cream pie latte, we're starting to see these really coming into places that are more familiar for consumers, which is exciting. I can't wait to see some of this coming into retail because, that's a great all family audience. It's at a theme park. It's trying to attract foodies because it is a food festival at an amusement park. So we still want to have that edge. And those are the types of profiles we're really excited to see.
Yeah, I mean, that is just, it speaks to the volume and the variety, especially seeing at Epcot, which, you know, there's so many different countries and regions and types of different cuisines that you can see there. But now it's really getting me into this kind of, as you said before, this vacation type vibes, but also just kind of like wanting to find, you know, like, okay, what drink and what amazing fruit am I going to have with this and these flavors? But I was told that that's not the only fiery thing necessarily. What's the next trend we got?
Yeah, that's a really good segue. So the next trend that we have is charred and smoked. So that is really a way to use those flavors to emphasize and underline the natural characteristics of a flavor profile of an ingredient or a dish. So in and of itself, char and smoke are no-nos. So we've been doing that for thousands of years. And if you talk to anybody in Memphis in May, they will laugh in your face. But this is really about how can you take those profiles and use them to get ingredients and dishes into the next level. So I will give you an example. Think about tomatoes. You bite into a tomato, it's fresh, it's tangy, it has some sweetness. What happens if you take a flavor that is adjacent, like ultra caramelizing tomatoes, if you use that technique on tomatoes, what will you get? You get a more mature flavor, you release all of that umami, it's sweeter, it has that caramelized note, it has those brown flavors all of a sudden. So that is a really good example of how do you use that to really emphasize the tomato flavor. And again, taking a step back, what are the influences that we saw? So a lot of people are trying to actively add more vegetables and fruits to their diets. So we are obviously seeing a lot more niche flavor when it comes to smoking meats, proteins, sure, and all of that. And that is becoming more and more of an art as well. So choosing the right flavor nuances is really, really big here. And also, on multiple menus around the globe, we saw chefs coming in with those ultra caramelized notes, char notes, smoke notes to really contribute to the overall interest of a dish so that you can, you know, as chefs, we know that it is something that's lacking in the produce world. So you really have to create interest. And how would you, as a chef, put something on your menu? You want to create, you know, the interest. Again, you want to be able to offer something to your crowd to keep them coming back. And suddenly people find themselves, you know, craving tomatoes because now they've tasted it in a way that is really appealing and giving them that meaty texture. Some of the things that we saw was, you know, even we had an example where charred cabbage, which was a menu item or a recipe that started on the New York Times, it skyrocketed in search around the globe, 350% increase. People started talking about it, featuring it on multiple menus. We saw things like charred carrot tops in the US. We saw smoked raw eggs in Australia. So people are actively looking for ways to incorporate that into their day-to-day. So you can actually purchase cold smoked eggs that are just like any egg, but when you crack it open and cook it, it actually has that smoke flavor within it, which is awesome. And I really want to travel there just to taste it now. But we've seen a lot of different things. Even in Canada, we saw smoked mustard, for instance. So you see all of these different ways in, of course, in drinks and in cocktails, you see lots of use of smoke, but in different ways. So it's how do you take that and use it to leverage all of those beautiful smoky notes. We also know that 72% of people say that they're interested and are looking for smoky notes in their foods. Mm. So that, you know, shows us how much of an intention to buy there is behind it. And then also looking for multiple ways of easy and convenient ways to, again, work that into their diet and into their day-to-day. So things like smoky seasoning. So a huge uptick in search. Smoke notes are really coming up. So people are, again, like very much looking forward to that.
Yes. So we are seeing a lot of these smoke and char profiles coming into retail products. And it's coming in a lot of the time in a way where it's adding a new twist to a familiar favorite for consumers. We see this in things like, let's just take wings, for an example. Everyone loves a wing. We see, you know, those classic profiles like lemon pepper that consumers love, getting new life by adding smoke to that, by doing a smoked lemon pepper. That gives that nice smoky profile to the lemon and almost makes it into a new type of profile. So I think that's one thing that we can really look at in a little bit more detail is taking some of these classics and giving them new life with these profiles. And by doing that, by adjusting the types of terms we're using. You know, you've heard us say smoke, char, grill, all these fun terms, but there's so many out there, you know, baked, grilled, charred, smoked, torched, and that those terms actually mean different things and carry different weight. When we're talking about something like a, smoked, we're going to get more notes of that smokiness. There are just so many terms to talk about cooking with fire, and we know that consumers are seeing these differently. And when you're developing, it's important to know what term you want to use. I mean, let's just use vanilla as an example. If we are talking about vanilla and adding fire to that, you know, you could caramelize vanilla, which is going to give you more sweet, brown, creamy notes. You could toast the vanilla, which makes it nuttier, sweeter, and just overall rich and roasty. Or you could smoke the vanilla, where you're going to get that more premium, that almost woody type of profile. But when we talk about smoking, it's not even just using the word smoke, but it's actually down to what you use to smoke it. If we are talking about different types of smoke, we can talk about cherry wood smoked, right? And now you're going to get more of these like resin, dark fruit, floral notes compared to if you use something like a oak with like its versatility and that moderate intensity that it has, or even something like applewood, which is again light and fruity and has more of a mild intensity comparatively. Really just knowing what type of smoke you are going for is helpful when developing, because it's going to affect the overall flavor profile that you have and give you more direction as to creating that perfect profile. And overall, with a lot of these more smoke and char profiles leaning into the premium space, I think it is really helpful to have that background. And when we are talking about these cooking with fire techniques, like Hadar mentioned earlier, it's not all about just adding in this fire on meat, but it's also about sweets. We've seen a lot of things like burnt caramel or burnt orange or smoked strawberries. We're seeing it, you know, in that savory space by adding in that those fruit profiles with the different cooking techniques like charred pineapples or even like a grilled pepper. And overall, these are just a lot of some of the fun ways we're seeing these play around. And these ingredients don't have to live by themselves. You can add them into other dishes to add that complexity. Let's say you have grilled a pepper here. You could honestly chop that up and then put it in salsa. Or like you've charred a tomato, you can make that into a charred tomato soup, or now turn that into salsa, which can allow it to have that complexity without having to just be a tomato.
So it's really taking a lot of these kind of flavors and elevating them to the next level by adding in those smoky, torched, as you said before, charred flavors necessarily.
Yes, and torched is actually a term that we are carefully watching, as we think it has a lot of play to make it more into the retail space. It's currently in fine dining, so we've got our binoculars out. We're honing in and keeping a close eye on it, but that is one that we're continuing to watch, because these different terms for fire have different familiarities for consumer. Grilled is really close in, torched is a little bit further out, and there in the middle, you've got things like smoked.
Okay, so it's not just going to be the barbecue lovers that are going to be really enjoying all these, but it's basically everybody can kind of really find these down-home comfort foods necessarily within these awesome flavors. And speaking of down-home and comfort, the last trend I've been told is deliciously unexpected. Can you speak a little bit more about that, Chef Hadar?
Please. So deliciously unexpected is a really, really fun one. Think about the fact that this trend is really about exploring new experiences or new ways to experience familiar foods we thought we knew. So we kind of predict seeing lots of new ways of showcasing foods that we are used to seeing in other occasions or in a certain context, and lifting flavors and putting them into a new context. So some examples are, again, like taking a step back, looking at influences. We know that people are constantly looking for food experiences, or we're looking to intensify some of the ways in. We know that we're always looking for interesting ways to, again, like keep people going back. We've seen multiple, let's say, fast casuals or restaurants having different LTOs in and out. So that's kind of hitting on people's willingness and interest in exploring new ways, exploring new flavors. And actually, 1 in 3 global consumers say that they're actively looking for different unusual foods and unusual dishes. And beyond that, 43% of global consumers say that they're looking for the crazy creations to really give them the unique, ultimate experience. So all of those notes kind of tell us people are looking for how do we bring in experience and immersive kind of experiences into food and into what we're looking at and into different products as well. So let me give you some examples from what we saw during the discovery phase. And if you want to indulge me for a second, let's do a little exercise. So think about green curry.
Okay.
What might make a green curry flavor profile, right? So I'm thinking green chilies, coconut, lemongrass, green chili paste. So we actually saw a restaurant take that and extract the flavor profile to then inspire a dessert.
Okay.
So how might that come to life? You basically take a flavor experience and take all of the different ingredients, and the interpretation might very much surprise you. You're expecting a green curry, a savory dish, right? And then you're delighted by an amazingly delicious dessert, which is complete with green curry sponge cake and an avocado sorbet. So you see all of that, all of those interpretations, just it surprises you again. And it's something that you're just not used to the context. So even by just hitting on that unexpected or that angle in, you take something that's very familiar and you twist it to be something that is net new. Another example is in Italy, we actually saw a place offering hummus in a latte cup. So it's the same hummus that we know and love,
okay,
but it was served in a mug complete with aquafaba, which is the liquid that chickpeas are suspended in, that was created into a foam. It's very well known for like a vegan kind of foam or a vegan
alternative.
Thank you. So we saw that mug, the hummus mug in Italy. And so, like, again, we saw it in different places around the world. We did also see a few other examples where it's just so fascinating to see how you take one thing and you create it into something that's a little different. Avocado sorbet, avocado ice cream was huge. We saw all these different things come to life here. And then another thing that I think is really exciting about this is the spicy angle in, which we always love seeing our trends come to life. We predicted that back in 2021. So actually, the evolution of spicy is also something that's encompassed within Deliciously Unexpected, because in a way, you can get those sweet and spicy notes and you see them mashed together. And that's kind of Deliciously Unexpected, but we did predict that in 2021. And that's something that we always love seeing. When trends evolve, that means it's a trend, that it's not a fad, right? So we always like to see the evolution, but in a way, this is, again, so new and there's so many ways and it's so differentiated than just spicy. And even if you take a look at spicy, it started with sweet and spicy. Now you have texture added in. You have things like gochujang ice cream, where you add texture, you add umami. It's no longer just spicy. It develops, it evolves, it becomes something bigger. So that's another angle that we just love seeing in Deliciously Unexpected. And, you know, we saw things like even savory drinks. So in China, we saw things like a black sesame savory coffee, or they have a local liqueur that is savory that they mixed in with coffee. And again, all of these little experiences by taking something familiar, getting it there, and really evolving it. Another angle that we see for Deliciously Unexpected is fantasy flavors. So Carrie will touch more on that, but how do you take an experience and leverage that? So things like that are really within that same realm.
So how exactly, that we've talked a lot about this, you know, Deliciously Unexpected, and there's a lot of meals out there, but how does that translate necessarily when it comes to the shelves or marketplace?
Yeah, so I think that it is absolutely wonderful to see all of the creativity from the chefs from around the world and what you can do on a plate. But, you know, when we actually get to putting things on a shelf, we typically do have to narrow in on something that consumers are excited about and is deliciously unexpected, but something that they want to go back and really explore. And we've seen a lot of really interesting products coming to retail in the last few years that I think have done this really well. Hmm. And the reason that they do this well is that they really hone in on their own brand and then something that their consumer base either also relates to or is also consuming, and brings it together in a way that's unexpected for them because they never expected to see those two profiles collide, or is unexpected because it's simply just social media explosion. It creates conversation because it's not something we expected.
For example, Crocs has been partnering with just about any and every
food brand out there. There was even Crocs cereal that came out here. We've also seen things like Coca-Cola Oreos. And you know that works because people eat Oreos and Coca-Cola at the same time. And it's unexpected because who would have ever thought of having a Coca-Cola flavored Oreo? Or even an example that came out was DiGiorno and Hidden Valley Ranch collabing to do a ranch pizza, which was just, again, unexpected from a standpoint of most of the time you're taking a piece of pizza and dipping it into ranch, but now the flavor is actually on the pizza, which is not something we typically see. So playing with these forms and how you're actually getting those flavors can be a good way to collab and really explore these profiles and deliver deliciously unexpected, as well as bringing in flavor profiles that maybe your consumers also love, but aren't typically on your product. We also, as Hadar mentioned earlier, have seen a lot of fantasy playing in this space. You know, within fantasy, that's been a fun way to bring in deliciously unexpected flavor profiles in a more approachable way to consumers because they don't necessarily have to know what the flavor is. It's a mystery. It's a surprise. It's a fantasy profile. And so within that, we would see maybe something like elderflower being utilized, which is unexpected. You know, it's a bit polarizing. Consumers either don't know what it is and so are a little bit either neutral or a bit put off because they aren't familiar with it, or they know what it is and it's a floral profile, so they may not love it, or they do know elderflower and they're obsessed with it. And to really get around that, you can use a fantasy name like sunset to cover that elderflower profile and still have that somewhere on the packaging, but have sunset be the predominant profile. And within fantasy, we're really seeing this evolution beyond mermaids and unicorns and pirates and characters and more into what I personally call buzzy abstract, which is emotions, feelings, intangible things, sunsets, nebulas, galaxies. We saw Coca-Cola do the year 3000. That's not a profile that you can taste, but they decided to try. And that's what we've been really seeing in the fantasy space as kind of that evolution. And I think a great way to make this deliciously unexpected a little bit more approachable for a retail consumer.
So now that we've whipped up all these amazing, wonderful combinations for these deliciously unexpected areas, let's get into the final meat of the actual flavor forecast. Can we talk about the flavor of the year? Drumroll, I guess.
Yeah.
So it's going to be
Aji Amarillo.
Aji Amarillo. Wow. Okay. So tell me a little bit about Aji Amarillo.
What is it? So Aji Amarillo is a tropical chili. It actually is grown within the tropical climate of Peru and other places within South America. It has truly tropical notes because it has passion fruit in the background, mango kind of flavors that come out. So it's very, very fruity. It's bright yellow, hence Aji Amarillo. As it ages or grows a little more, when it becomes ripe, it can be the shade of orange and somewhat, you know, within the range of yellow to orange. It is of medium heat level, so think cayenne-ish.
Okay.
So that's the kind of heat that we're talking about. So we love it because it's an approachable heat. It's not something that's in your face, and it gives you an opportunity to taste all of things beyond it. So we are all about flavor, right? We don't want to blindside you with something too hot. So that's one of the other reasons that we just love it. And we loved seeing it come up in so many different places around the globe. So we touched a little bit on what it is. It also has, I will add, a really nice, from a visual standpoint, when it comes to culinary applications, it does have a really nice aesthetic appeal. It has this really nice yellow-orange hue. So you can actually see it before you taste it. So that's something that, from a culinary standpoint, it is very much a note that chefs like because they get to play around with it and color everything from condiments to sauces to cocktails with that beautiful color. So now if we talk about the trends, why is it relevant? So obviously tropical, we hit on that. That's kind of clear. But when it comes to smoke and char, it is not a smoked pepper. But we all know that when you have something smoky and char, you really enjoy a dish or really enjoy a flavor. When you add that nice heat, when you add that nice flavor to it, it really cuts through what we call something that's rich or something that's very smoky. It lets you, oh, it's almost like a palate cleanser within the bite. So you can enjoy all of those layered flavors. It gives you a more, let's say, complex experience. So that really adds that tang, adds that little bit of freshness through the heat that it has and those fruity notes as well. So that's smoke and char. That's the way in. And then for Deliciously Unexpected, the amount of very interesting ways in which we saw Ahi Mario come to life, it was just mind-blowing. And that also touches on how versatile this flavor and this ingredient is. From a Deliciously Unexpected angle, we saw it on everything from in a sauce with oysters, which is, you know, maybe you think about that's a really nice way in. It also lends a beautiful orangey color to the sauce. And then we saw it, you know, again, outside of its original context. So that gave us even more meat to work with and data points, but also just the way it showed up. It showed up on appetizers like in a vinaigrette on a lettuce salad. It showed up on as a almost like a condiment, as a sauce for roasted Brussels sprouts in the UK. We saw even a cocktail in Canada that had Ahi Mario in the simple syrup. So it was infused into the simple syrup. So you didn't really taste you didn't see the Ahi Mario itself, but you could taste all those notes, taste the heat that came through. And again, like those are some of the really, really interesting ways in. So all of that made it that, you know, Ahi Mario was something that people started talking about. You saw it again coming out of context, the original context, which tells us it does have that expected growth. We also saw that from a data standpoint, it is expected to rise 40% on new menus, which in the next 4 years, which tells us again, like this is beyond the context of, you know, a lot of people saw it in Peruvian cuisine or in South American cuisine, but we are seeing it in totally different ways. So similar to how we saw things, you know, in years past, this kind of like has the same projection. So that all makes it the flavor of the year.
You can really put Ahi Mario in anything. And what I love about this particular pepper is that it works in both savory and sweet applications because of those fruity notes. It really lends itself so well to being able to go into desserts. I personally would love to see this in a cookie and maybe adding in like more notes of pineapple or to really play around with the fruitiness of that. Or you could put it in something like a sauce and, you know, add that onion and garlic and it will really play with the fruitiness that can be found in onion and garlic already and just overall create these nice blends. I personally am such a fan of Ahi Mario, and I really think it's a great addition to what I like to call the pepper bucket list. Consumers, either consciously or unconsciously, have in the back of their heads this pepper bucket list where they want to try new peppers. And this is especially true for spicy lovers.
Of course.
They have said, okay, I've had a jalapeno, check. That is off the pepper bucket list. I know I've had it. Okay, what is next? Chipotle, yep, had that, check. Habanero, check. And then when they're going and looking for these new items and they see something on a menu or on a retail shelf that is a pepper and they haven't had before, gets added to that pepper bucket list. And whether they try it then or in the future, they want to add more to it. It's kind of a badge of honor to wear and say, I've tried X amount of peppers, whether they know that consciously or not. It's a part of, you know, exploring and being an adventurous eater for a lot of these different consumers.
So let's put a nice sweet bow and kind of culminate this episode itself. Tell me some key takeaways. If somebody has to really understand a lot about the flavor forecast itself, what would you just kind of describe that as?
That's a really great question. I think that when it comes to the flavor forecast, the one thing to remember, generally speaking, we do have differentiated new trends each year to look forward to. So be on the lookout, see what's coming up, and remember that it's 18 months to 3 years ahead. So some things may be immediate and some things may be a little, you know, longer out, but it gives you a really nice way. Everybody can find a way in the flavor forecast. It's all about how do you take these really amazing different influences and work them into your respective business and find your way within those flavors, because we covered so much ground. There isn't possibly one thing I can give you, but
right.
The flavor forecast as a tool is a true asset. That's what I will give you.
So Carrie, tell us some key takeaways. What exactly our audience should really take away from this?
I think just as you are working on the bench, to just explore new options and new twists on some of those classic profiles. That was overall theme for us this year, is really to continue to push the boundaries of what we can do, whether it's deliciously unexpected and adding a twist that maybe isn't expected, but is still incredibly delicious, or with tropical vibes, maybe switching in a new type of fruit or pairing it with a fruit that is familiar. And then with smoke and char, adding a little bit of touch of fire to a classic profile, I think can be great ways to entice and delight the end consumers for different products.
So that really does kind of wrap it up. But before, we always have a surprise question at the very end. So I'm going to ask you, I saw that there was a night market that we did for the flavor forecast itself. If I had to, what would be your booth and your signature dish if you had a booth at that night market?
100%. I am creating a booth for corn. I am told all the time that I am corny. I love a good pun. And I would just have to embody that and make a booth full of different corns, all with different flavorings. I think that that is a great base to be able to play around with some of these different twists that we've been talking about. And I think my signature dish would definitely have to be, you know, some sort of spicy corn. Maybe it has that Ají Amarillo on it and a bunch of different fruits. I think that that would be my ideal booth.
I would definitely be able to visit that booth. Chef Hadar, what do we got?
I'm going to have to go with a McCormick recipe booth.
Okay.
Because we, as a global community of chefs, always create recipes to bring the report to life through actual culinary examples. And we have such good recipes this year. It's all available on flavorforecast.com. Everybody can make these in their own home. And it's with pantry staples that you usually have.
And I have to say, they absolutely kill it with the recipes. I cannot wait to try the smoked strawberry and orange Negroni. I've been eyeballing that for a while now, and I think this is giving me that push to go home and make it.
Well, you guys heard it here. Make sure to definitely check out those recipes and the flavor forecast just by searching and Googling it or going to flavorforecast.com as well. That's going to wrap it up for today. I really cannot thank you both enough for being here. Thank you, Carrie. Thank you, Chef Hadar. I really appreciate it. And that's going to do it for our episode. So remember, again, when it comes to it, McCormick is the flavor of life. So go out and taste it.